Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 16th, 2005. Today's forum is entitled Discussion of ELCA Churchwide Assembly with Holden Delegates, session number FO2005-27. Let's listen in.
Thank you all for coming. There's a weekly forum sponsored by the staff for the larger community as a way for us to talk together. And this week it seemed important, even though there are two key staff members from the village who were at Churchwide Assembly who are not back, it seemed important for us to be able to take an opportunity soon after the end of Churchwide Assembly to talk together about what transpired and to hear from at least some of those who are here in the village who attended Churchwide Assembly. And we have three, Christopher, John, and Mary. And so the format that I'd like to have for tonight is to hear from them about their experiences, not in great depth, but in some detail, so we can frame our conversation from the perspective of people who were there and who witnessed what happened in Florida. And then encourage questions and comments and emoting of whatever sort that needs to happen, and there's a freedom here to speak your mind. And we don't assume everyone has the same opinion. I've already said a lot of the emotion I have on my heart in the sermon I preached on Sunday, but I don't at all assume everyone agrees with me or has the same sort of feeling I do. And so we encourage you to make this a space of hospitality and of honesty and of graciousness so that as we talk together, we can truly be the church in this place and to reflect together about the difficulties that we face, not just on the issue of sexuality, but on the many issues that were considered at Churchwide Assembly and that we face as a church. So I didn't introduce myself, but let me say I'm Chris Sharon, and I serve the village as a teaching staff coordinator, and it's an honor to be here in the role of facilitator. And I'll facilitate gently, but my main aim is to try and enter as many voices as possible into the conversation. And so if I do ignore you, it's not because I don't see you, it's because I'm trying to get as many voices into the conversation as we can. So with that, let's begin. And just, I don't know if any of you feel like going first, but we could just go down the row from our official delegate.
I'll go first.
Okay, great. Thank you.
My name is Christopher Gilia, and I serve as Holden's operations manager. And in May of 2004, I attended our Synod Assembly in Spokane and had been nominated by Emily Meyer, our pastor here, as a candidate for the Churchwide Assembly. And I came in third, which means that I wasn't going to get to go because there was two slots for a lay male. But I was the first alternate. And after several months, somebody had to drop out, so I then was the next in line to go to Churchwide Assembly. So I was one of nine voting members from Eastern Washington and Idaho that traveled through Orlando last week for this assembly. There were two lay males, two lay females, two clergy, one youth, one multicultural, and our bishop. So together there was nine, and there were many other people that went as visitors and as staff and as resource people. And I just got back today, and I have not written a report, or I haven't even completely processed everything that happened last week. So it was very intense, and there was a great deal of things that went on. So I think I'll just start by reading the pre-assembly material. 2.5 inches tall that were sent to everybody to study ahead of time, and which we referred to constantly throughout the week. Or I could just try to summarize it. What I don't want to do tonight is get into a debate over some of the issues, but I'll be happy to describe to you how I voted and why. And I'm also not an expert on church structure or constitution, or I'm not an expert on any of the issues that we talked about, which were literally hundreds of them. Some of you in the room perhaps have are more of an expert than I am. But I do want to paint a little bit of a picture about what it was like down there and about who was there and the mood of the week. And then after the others talk, I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can and give you some more information. If you can imagine a ballroom the size of probably six of our village centers that was lined with tables and it had close to 2,000 people in there. There was 1,000 voting members from all over the country. There was another 500 registered visitors, and there was some hundreds of staff people, resource people, and technical people, and volunteers helping. So it was a very large room and very full. And up in front, there were big screens, and they had a lot of high-tech equipment at this churchwide assembly, and the people that were speaking and the presiding chair were projected up on these huge screens, so you had good visibility from anywhere in the room. And they also had somebody transcribing. Every word that was said was typed into a machine and projected on the wall as well. So you could also read what everyone was saying. There was an amazingly talented person who was able to do that. And whatever we were discussing from this book or something else was up there. And if it was amended, that was typed in right away. So you had instant access to all the materials. And we all had voting machines. We all had a little machine on our desk in front of us in which we could vote yes or no. So the results were known instantly, and they were extremely accurate. And there was not a lot of a debate over whether we needed a voice vote or a written vote or a count of the House or anything else. The week was very full. I attended 8 Eucharist services in the last week. We had sessions from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. We had breaks for worship and for meals. We had hearings on top of that and receptions and Bible studies. We heard speeches from our ecumenical partners, the Catholics, the LCMS, the Lutheran Church in Canada. There was a Jewish rabbi who addressed the crowd. We had all the church units reporting, Lutheran World Relief and Augsburg Publishing House, and on, we had reports from the bishop and the vice president and the secretary and representatives of all kinds of other groups. We went through this book, literally through this book, and we had, I don't know, maybe 100 times that we voted. 104 elections. Voted on some very important things for the church this week, not just the sexuality, but the restructuring of the national structure, the approval of renewing worship to go forward, communion with the Methodists, which is a big thing that was very exciting, and many of the memorials that the local synods had sent to churchwide. So it was a lot to do, and you had to be completely focused every minute, because you, even though you thought you knew what you wanted to vote on and you had read the material, somebody would amend it, and then it would be a whole different kind of slant on it, and you had to be really sharp to make votes that you really felt good about. And there was a lot of discussion, a lot of conversation, and it was my pledge to go to this with an open mind, to go not having all my answers, not having my cards all filled out about how I was going to vote, but to listen to the people, listen to the people that were there. And I don't want to talk too much longer, but I did want to also say a little bit about the attitude of this room full of people. If I was very impressed with the fact that this was really a grassroots assembly. There were people there. There was a lot of church professionals there, but there was a lot of people just like me, people that were elected from their synods that came. They weren't, didn't come having worked in the church full time, that were struggling with these issues. And it was not a top-down kind of thing. The chair was very even-handed. It was really the will of the church, the will of the people from every state in the country, every synod that was spoken last week. And there were some surprising results from that. You know, some of them I feel really good about, others I don't feel as good about. But it was what we think as a church. It wasn't something that was put on us. last week. So it was a tremendously interesting, exciting, and intense week, and I'm extremely grateful to be able to have gone and to represent the people from Washington and Idaho. But I wanted to clarify one thing. I was not a delegate. I was a voting member, and there's a very, very distinct difference there, is that I could vote as my conscience dictated based on what I've heard and what I studied. I was not delegated to vote in any particular way.
Thank you. My name is John Brett. I attended Churchwide Assembly as a representative of the Eastern Washington Idaho Synod to the Young Adult Convocation. And that means that I wasn't there for the entire assembly, but I was there for a significant portion of it. I was present on the assembly floor, had right to be on the floor, but unless and until I was helping to craft and present the young adult report to the assembly, I did not have vote, but in that one instance did have voice. We were, of course, able to observe much of the assembly and to engage in dialogue with both voting members, visitors, and others present over meals or on the floor or elsewhere within the hotel and premises in which the assembly is being held. I'd like to echo what Christopher said and that I was very thankful to be there. It was, for me, I would say I was extremely fulfilled and happy to be present in what I consider to be a precarious time for the church. I don't mean precarious in the sense that we usually use it, but in its ancient meaning, and being precarious, a prayer-filled time. And that's one thing that I take with me from the assembly, is the amount of prayer that was present both on the assembly floor before many of our most contentious and heart-wrenching votes, as well as the prayer that I know is taking place throughout the gathering off the floor and in here at Holden, here across the United States in churches, holding vigils for us. I see it as a prayer-filled time, and I was happy to be present and involved, both in the prayer and in the actions that the prayer was influencing. If you have questions for me about what I did as part of the young adult convocation, I welcome those. As well as I was present for the entire day on Friday on the floor during discussions and examination of the sexuality resolutions. And of course had many opportunities to speak with a variety of delegates, voting members, about what had transpired earlier in the week and what had transpired later in the week while I was there. I left the assembly with a much greater sense of renewal and hope than I expected to. And that's coming from my perspective of being someone who's a proponent for change within the church as far as opening up the roster to LGBT folks in committed relationships and being a proponent for blessings of same-gender unions. Welcome any questions there. I also feel that probably the most important resolution before the assembly floor happened on Saturday, with very little fanfare and probably no national press coverage. And I can also... and that was a resolution asking a variety of folks at Churchwide, elsewhere within our Lutheran colleges, our professors, to examine and present to the ELCA what it means to engage in a Lutheran hermeneutic. What does it mean to grapple with the Gospels, with the Bible, with Scripture, in a Lutheran way. And as that is the crux and the foundation of so many of the questions before our church right now, I see that as being yet another sleeper issue before probably the next two churchwide assemblies. And that will be the one that I'm probably even more interested in watching develop, especially as a number of factions are becoming better and better organized within our church. I also was very involved with Good Soil while I was at the assembly. And if any of you have questions about Good Soil and what they're trying to do, the variety of direct actions and advocacy that they did during the assembly, I'd be willing to take some questions about those things. But of course, Jane and Ellen will be back in the village tomorrow and will probably be presenting later in the week. We have even more to add to that discussion.
Thank you.
My name is Mary Peterson, and I am an EFDA pastor from Portland, Oregon. And I went as a registered, I was one of the 500 registered visitors. And I went primarily because I felt that this was a historical time in the church, and I wanted to be a part of that history and part of that learning. And what I realized is that it wasn't only about history in the making, as far as movement, as far as what it means to be Lutheran and be reforming, to be about change, but it was really about justice making. And when I arrived there, I took an overnight flight from Portland, so I arrived in Orlando on Monday morning at 8:20. And the assembly didn't start until Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, with the Eucharist at 4:30. But at 12 o'clock that that day on Monday, just 4 hours after I arrived, I went to the Good Soil room, which and there we had a training on nonviolence. And it was a very powerful experience to be sort of thrust into this experience of justice making. Of how is it that those of us who were there, many of us in Good Soil, were visitors, to be able to be a visible witness of supporting the voters, of being there for them and with them and praying in silent vigil. So the way the assembly was set up, as Christopher said, there was the voting members were in their section. And then on either side of the voting members were the place where the visitors could be. And you could go to either side. And so we kind of alternated sides. And those of us who were involved in Good Soil, one of the things that was very powerful throughout the assembly is that we wore these rainbow scarves. I can't quite take mine off. it was such a powerful experience of wearing these scarves and seeing how many people were wearing them, not only those of us who were involved in Good Soil, but many, many other people. It was a witness. And those of us who were in Good Soil would line up along the side of the visitor section and stand in vigil with the rainbow scarves, also with pictures, and even in the hallways before we come into the assembly, and there'd be a sticker on somebody saying, "Ask me about my story." Mm-hmm. So it's a really powerful building of relationship and making connections. Although at the same time, what we heard is that those of us who were wearing the rainbow scarves, that also kept us away from people. So it was a tension there. So for some people who wanted to stand up and speak, the question was, do you wear your scarf or not? Because of the visibility that it showed. the one thing that I didn't realize either, and this is how our church is sort of, in a sense, it's really about unity, but there is those contingencies of, you know, there was the word alone, folks. There were many people who were there with word alone, and I don't know how many of you know what word alone is. Some of you don't. It's a more conservative group of people who are part of the ELCA, who have sort of decided to go, not break off. They're still connected, but they have different views. I also realized, I thought that Solid Rock Lutherans were the same as Word Alone, but there's yet another group called Solid Rock Lutherans. And so, you know, it's really important, and that's one of the recommendations that we passed on Friday, was the first recommendation, which was about unity. And I think that was a real important vote, that we stay connected, and that we be a part of that unity together, even though we have differing views. So I'm also here to, if you have questions, it was a very powerful experience for me to be there as a visitor. And I commit myself to being there again in 2007 and 2009. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to be a part of this experience of this church that is moving forward. I too sense that hope, even though it was hard and disappointing that we aren't quite where I wish us to be, but we are moving, and that's a good thing. So, do you have questions?
I would like to know, what are some of the specific things that you could cite that would make us feel like we're moving forward? Because I don't have that same feeling from afar.
I don't have all of the specific vote totals and percentages and numbers. Christopher may have more of those. But first, as far as the second resolution was concerned, and that was concerning blessing same-gender relationships. The passage of that recommendation far exceeded the two-thirds majority. And one could say, well, the resolution was vague, it was ambiguous, it wasn't specific, but although the wording of the specific resolution was vague and ambiguous, listening to the debate and dialogue on the floor of the assembly made it 100% clear that the term pastoral care for LGBT folks, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender folks, can include blessing of same-gender relationships. And there will be, of course, pastors who are still not comfortable with that. But I think that for those pastors who have felt some hesitancy, they now have an affirmation of their agency as pastors to perform those same-gender blessings. And we don't have a specific official right yet, but it's happening. And now it can happen more openly. And momentum, because of that, will grow towards future assemblies. I would also say that all of the amendments to resolutions that were put forward that sought to limit blessings, marriage to opposite gender or different gender partners, male-female partners, failed. And a great majority, by a significant majority, not 51-49, but by 55%, 57%, 59%. And so although people weren't willing to maybe quite go that next step to say, yes, 100% we will ordain LGBT folks, or that we will bless them in their unions, they were equally probably and less willing to take to be regressive or move back towards greater limitation.
I want to acknowledge that what it means for the church to move forward means something different.
Yes, thank you.
To a lot of people, and maybe to some of you in this room. Mm-hmm. So the church is moving what I consider in a progressive direction on this issue, but it's moving very slowly, and it's moving that way because the people of the church, as represented by those in that room last week, are very careful, and are this is not anything we're going headlong into. It's everyone in that room, my sense was being very prayerful, very deliberate, very conscientious about this process. Even the people that I would disagree with. And that's why these things were written the way they were, is because of that first resolution, which we very strongly supported, that the unity of the church moving forward together was of highest importance. And that wasn't true for everyone in the room, certainly, but it was true for the overwhelming majority. The church, we did make some significant changes and decisions, and others we weren't ready to make yet.
Before we get too far away from the resolution that you were referring to, is it possible, does anyone have it there without maybe reading all the whereases and everything?
Which one are you referring to?
The one that, number two.
Yeah. Well, there
regarding blessing you, but same.
There are three resolutions that were actually recommendations from the Sexuality Task Force as presented to the Assembly by the Churchwide Council.
So it was the second of the three unamended?
The first one was about unity, the second one was about blessing of unions, and the third was about ordination. The first two passed, the third did not. There was attempts to amend all of them. And the only amendments that passed was a small amendment to the second one, and then it passed with that amendment. And I have them all here in front of me. You want me to read the second one? Is
that
your request?
I guess I just missed it. I wasn't sure if you were talking about the three that the church council had sent on, or they were numbered differently or something.
The other thing with regard to the blessing is that, as I understood it, is that the pastors who perform the blessing,
yes,
will not be disciplined. They will not be disciplined. To me, that's hopeful. There doesn't have to be then that fear of can I do this or not? And I mean that if that is where you are called to be, it's not for everybody. But if there's not that tension of, am I going to get in trouble? That was a change in the.
To take it one step further, I'm a pastor in Massachusetts. Any sense of same-sex marriages?
First of all, we're talking about blessings of unions as distinct from marriages. Marriages would be something that government, the Congress would need to act on, not the church.
Well, but in Massachusetts, it's legal. So, but there's been kind of a church and society. We've been kind of dancing until the end,
yes,
of Churchwide Assembly. So, your best guess? There were no
not
definitions
yet.
Of.
No.
It's a matter of time.
I would say.
I mean, that's what the assembly is, I believe.
I would say that at this moment, I heard, and Christopher can clarify this, no language that used the term marriage for same-gender partners.
Yeah.
And so the church has, in my understanding at this point, no marriage for same-gendered folks, although there is a blessing of unions. And whether or not, maybe that union in Massachusetts is a marriage, but whether or not the church would call it that is...
That's not something we discuss directly.
Yeah.
My guess is that once it becomes legal in a state, like it is in Massachusetts, then there will be done in the church by somebody somewhere in Massachusetts, and that we will see them.
What will be done?
A marriage in the church.
I don't understand.
The church never.
All I've ever done in my whole ministry is bless marriages. The marriage is a legal arrangement by the state that I, as a pastor, have blessed, and that's all I've ever done. I don't understand what's changed here.
It is fairly subtle. Why don't we stop and let me read the resolution to you so you can see just how subtle it is. And I can give you a little information based on my conversations about the marriage part of it. But I don't have all the answers there either. Recommendation for assembly action, majority vote required. Resolve that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America continue to respect the guidance of the 1993 statement of the Conference of Bishops. I can go into that in a minute. And be it further resolved that this church welcome gay and lesbian persons into its life, as stated in the Churchwide Assembly resolutions from 1991, 1995, and 1999, and trust pastors and congregations to discern ways to provide faithful pastoral care to all to whom they minister. Period. And so it's fairly subtle. And reading that by itself, first let me explain, the one amendment that was made to this said pastoral care to same-sex couples. And that was struck, and all to whom they minister was in its place. That was an amendment. And of all the people I've talked to, nobody thinks that's a substantial change. I mean, it doesn't mean anything different because of that. But it was meant to be a clarifying amendment. And also, all the pastors, I got together with a group of friends of mine that were pastors, and they all feel like this means that if they were asked to do a blessing, that they would go ahead in consultation with their bishop. And that was clearly the understanding of the assembly, that that's what this one was about. But we declined, there were many amendments to this, and I can read some of those if you have an interest, but there was attempts to make it very clear, is that, yes, this means that we will bless same-sex unions, and there were attempts to make it very clear in the other way, so no, we will not. And all of those very clarifying amendments failed. And we instead went for something that was not clarifying, that that was intentionally vague. And in some ways, a lot of people stood up and said, I've been doing these blessings for years. And now this is sort of an affirmation of this discretion the pastors have for pastoral care to all to whom they minister. And as you minister to a same-sex couple, it may be appropriate to do a blessing, but it's not an official right of the church at this point.
Can I add something? The first whereas, the very first thing in this resolution is this, whereas this church holds that, quote, marriage is a lifelong covenant of faithfulness between a man and a woman. And then the quotation is from Message on Sexuality, which the ELCA put out as a sort of conciliatory statement after the crash and burn of its first attempt to write a sexuality statement in the early 90s. Well, that quote doesn't actually come from the Message on Sexuality, it comes from the Lutheran Church in America's social statement on sex, marriage, and the family in the early 70s. And the Lutheran Church in America tried during the entire decade of the 60s to come up with a statement on sexuality and just had a really tough time of it. Some of you probably attended some of those assemblies and know that it was a long struggle. And that definition of marriage was included as a piece of conciliation then to those who were reluctant to move in a progressive direction in the late 60s and early 70s. And so you can take whatever you want from that, but I think it's important to say, in terms of the facts of our historical deliberations as a church, that this statement that's the lead statement in this resolution has been a statement that's been a part of the conversation for now going on 30 plus years around how do we say a certain kind of thing about what marriage is, first and foremost. And some people are very happy about that being said clearly and first and foremost, and other people are nervous about the fact that it's the first and most prominent thing that's said. But it's not something new. It's something that we've been inserting in statements for quite some time.
Number two, by the way, passed with a 67% majority.
Yeah, I wanted to just ask you about what your impression of the report of the task force on sexuality was. I read it and was very disappointed by it. And there are many reasons for that, but one of them, there was data came with it on, you know, it was compiled through studies in congregations, right. And there was a lot of data on who participated in those conversations. And there are lots of inferences I drew from that. It was largely an older crowd who responded even to the sexuality study. I think the average age of respondents was well into the 50s. And this report was based on these responses. So I don't, in part anyway, from what I understand.
I would disagree with that.
Okay. What are your impressions? I mean, that was my impression. I'm just curious to hear what you thought about the
and maybe itself. Say what role the task force played at the churchwide assembly as well, so people know.
Well, the man who sat next to me for the entire week was on the sexuality task force. He's from Eastern Washington, from Moses Lake. And also one of our teaching staff members who was in the village the week before the assembly was on the sexuality task force as well. So I've had an opportunity for some conversations there. I was disappointed with the task force's recommendations before the assembly. And there were other people disappointed for other reasons than I was. But I have, after the assembly now, I have new appreciation for the work of the task force. It was clear to me that they worked very, very hard to try to move the church forward without getting so far in front of the church that the whole thing fell apart. The surveys that were done was information that they had available to them in their discernment. It was not something that was a determining factor in their recommendations. In fact, if you look at the surveys, you could see that in a lot of overall, folks were against change, about 2-1, and the task force was for change. Not as much change as I would have liked, but more change than a lot of other people would have liked. And they had a very difficult task, of course, and they struggled very hard, they worked very hard, they put in a lot of hours, and they, after conversations with the individuals on that task force, they were extremely faithful in that work. And I see their recommendations in a little bit different light now.
Well, they also were divided themselves, and they made that very clear. There were a couple hearings. I think Christopher had mentioned that earlier, and so we had opportunity to come together and go to these hearings, and people were able to ask questions of the task force, and then they were able to respond. Those were very good. In fact, I wish we had more hearings. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a time to be able to, rather than just do the study together in communities, to be able to have a place where we're asking the questions of the people who are looking at the 28,000 responses that they got. And they said, we read through all 28,000 responses. I mean, so, yeah, you do have a, when you're right there with the task force, you have a different appreciation for the work that they have done. And their work is not over. They will continue to do their work, to be able to guide this church in further dialogue.
My experience in my congregation in doing the study, incidentally, was that some of the most open people in regard to the study were the oldest folk in my congregation.
Yeah,
true. I think we need to be careful with giving too much weight to the study. The study was merely a recommendation. It wasn't a dictation.
It was one piece of information they had available to them.
One thing that concerns me is my understanding of my call is that my blessing of marriages and or unions is dependent on the congregation. Whether or not I would personally feel good about doing a union, I would feel compelled to ask the congregation's permission to use the building before I would do something like that. Was there any of that kind of conversation? I mean, to say that it's between the pastors and the bishops, I think violates at least my understanding of call.
That wasn't stated on the assembly floor. The pastors that I talked to individually stated that they wouldn't do one without consulting with their bishop.
Is that written anywhere? The consultation?
No, that was one of the amendments.
That was one of the amendments.
Right,
but
it is not.
But for the sake of good order, which is a part of that letter of call.
And it wasn't spelled out that you would consult your congregation, but I think that's part of the pastor's sense of call and their own discretion that they wouldn't take their congregation further than the congregation, or too much further than the congregation, maybe a little bit.
I'm not sure it's a matter of discretion. I think the congregation needs to be a partner in that.
That would be up to the individual pastor.
Was there an amendment as well to have the congregation sign off on it or not? I don't remember. But in a conversation that I was having with the pastor about what happened with the defeat of the amendment or of the resolution in Canada in the Lutheran Church there, I guess there was an amendment to this as well, saying that you needed approval from your congregation. Is that yes, it is good to have these conversations and to know where your congregation's at, but not to have it written specifically in the policy that you have to have your congregation's blessing, because there are times within the discretion of a pastor and his call and his ministry or her ministry that they will feel that they need to go against what the majority of the congregation or where that majority of the congregation is. So therefore, it's not written specifically anywhere that you have to have that. But consultation with the congregation and or consultation with the bishop is something that many pastors will do. Right?
And all attempts to nail this thing down fail.
This really
whichever way people are trying to nail it down.
Well, ultimately, there's no winners in this.
Well, I think that's really, I'm really glad about that, because I'm thinking of my internship congregation 20 years ago, and my internship supervisor, I remember, blessed a church wedding. It was not a legal wedding, for an elderly couple she was dying, and they had lived together for many years, and she was on the road towards death. And it was a social security issue. Mm-hmm. And so he did this blessing. And anything that was set in stone in a similar way wouldn't have allowed him to provide pastoral care to them. So I
want to just remind us that so far we talked about one resolution here, and there were literally 100 others. So if you have an interest in something else, or even the third recommendation for the task force.
Let's go here and then in the back.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to ask,
because
the ordination count.
Yeah.
Well,
where
do
we go?
Yeah. Recommendation 3 was 49% were for it and 51% were against it. There was a spread of like 40 votes.
What was a passing majority?
This one needed two-thirds because it had constitution ramifications.
People were divided on recommendation three. And so, I mean, there were some people who didn't care for or didn't like the recommendation. So the fact that it was defeated was in a sense a good thing. But again, it was just about 13 votes, I think.
Yeah, that's just those.
It was 490 to 503.
Yes.
But the fact that it needed to be a two-thirds majority in order to pass for the ordination
and,
of gay marriage.
And Good Soil was on record for not being in favor of recommendation three.
So you had, between 30 and 50 voting members who were there with Good Soil, otherwise proponents of change in the church as far as this particular policy, who were voting against that because they did not want to establish in church policy a second-class participation, a discriminatory policy, particularly when in 2 to 4 years they would still be advocating for ordination for LGBT folks at the same, on par with all other candidates. And, you know, 2 or 4 years from now, you run the risk of, if we pass this now, you're some nice, white, moderate, middle-class person saying, you already have ordination. Why are you still bugging us about this? Stop pushing for change. We've already given it to you. And so they didn't want to put themselves or their friends and allies into a position of continually being second class or having to go through additional hoops and approvals.
Can you tell us more about how this created some second class?
What's the word you meant?
Well, this one's a long one.
Exceptional.
It was put as an exception.
That's a good church. It's an exception.
That's right. And there was, again, a lot of attempts to strengthen this or to weaken it, depending on how you want to look at it, and those all failed. But the fact that we literally were tied on this one, that half the room, half the voting members voted for this, was extremely significant, even though it failed. This was the harder one.
Let's go in the back and then.
Chris, there was at least a brief mention. I'm sorry, does somebody else have the floor?
No, you do.
Okay, earlier there was at least a brief mention that one of the things that's going on here is the need to adjust, perhaps even achieve, a truly Lutheran hermeneutic to understand the interpretation of things. And if you consider the volume of writing that Martin Luther did, to where a researcher who had a particular agenda could find information from Martin Luther that would support almost any particular view that he wanted to, but if you were going to be compassionate and careful and thoughtful and respectful of everybody, then when you examine his stuff, you intercompare and you check and you come to a more a sensitive, and what I want to get the word out here, ambiguous answer to some of these things. And I think that Scripture offers the same thing. It offers an immense variety of possible interpretations, and we have to be very careful that to be truly Lutheran, we're going to have to be aware of that thing, that it is, in fact, possibly ambiguous. And so I love the fact that I'm hearing that as part of the way they want to keep the wording going there, because as pointed out, history is going on here. There's going to be another assembly and then another assembly, and it's like the river has started to flow.
There was a lot of conversation about how to read the Bible. A lot of people who voted against these recommendations really seemed like they wanted to vote for them. Like, this all makes sense. Of course, we're an inclusive church. We welcome people on the fringes and all this kind of thing. But it's in the Bible, and they couldn't get around that. They read it in the Bible, and they couldn't find a way around that. So then how do you read the Bible? You know, you pick out these verses, or do you read it as a whole? And that's a very interesting conversation, and it's definitely this sort of fundamentalist part of the Lutheran Church that wants to take the Bible literally and wants to be able to take a verse out of it and have it stand alone and say, this is what it says. This is the scripture.
Please. Was the war in Iraq dealt with?
There were a number of resolutions about the Middle East, and about Palestine, not Iraq. The way the memorials worked, those of you who have been in the Synod Assemblies know that you can send a memorial to the Churchwide Assembly. That's something that the Synod is sending on for consideration. And there were, how many of those?
192 memorials.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of them. And the way that that was handled was there was a memorials committee, and they went through these. And they sorted them and organized them in such a way that we could vote on them en bloc, it's called, as a large group. And then people had an opportunity to pull certain ones out of en bloc and talk about them separately. And there was, 10 of them or something that were pulled from en bloc and we discussed. And the others we didn't discuss. And there's a whole inch of this book on those. And I haven't read all of those. But I have the list here, and I have copies of them all, so we can check and see if there were some on our own.
There was talk about, I appreciate one that you bring that up, because it's like, we're in the middle of a war, and we haven't been addressed that. Mm. One of the things that I left on Sunday so that I could come and see you, and I can't tell you what a gift it is to know that Holden exists, and to be able to come to this place after our churchwide assembly and to rest. But to be able to be with people who are going to engage in these kinds of things, it is truly a gift. Holden is a gift to the church. But one of the things that we talked about too, I wasn't there for that, but was the whole issue of hunger. Mm-hmm. So that was addressed. I mean, again, those of you who are here at Holden can appreciate this. Here we are at the Marriott World Resort, 2 miles from Disney World. And one of our issues is hunger. It just didn't, I mean, again, you have to find a place that's going to fit everybody. We were all under one roof, not just in the big ballroom, but we all stayed there. And so it's a huge complex. So the paradox or the tension between all of this property and this entertainment, and here we're dealing with the issue of world hunger.
There was a memorial here that we did pass en bloc that was, I will read just the resolve here. Request that the government of the United States and its allies end all military actions in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's the essence of it. And we passed that as part of a large package of other ones. This wasn't something we grappled with. This was just something that we agreed with. Nobody asked to take it out for conversation. And there were lots of significant ones like that essentially weren't controversial.
Got a twofold question on the hunger issue. Was there anything passed or anything at all, other than discussion is all well and good, but if no action, was there any action taken?
Yes, we passed a memorial. There was, the budget has a significant millions of dollars more for world hunger. There was a lot of conversation and a lot of amendments to that one. And let me check my notes.
You mean the budget increased amount that will be given towards?
No, the budget didn't increase, but the budget's actually gone down. But the percentage of the budget for world hunger has gone up dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's, what, $4 or $5 million or something was a large amount of a significant increase.
Okay, and then the second question, thank you. About renewing worship, I read in one of the emails, I was just scanning through from Ellen or someone who was present, that the language in renewing worship was something that brought dialogue. What happened concerning renewing worship and just
renewing worship passed by a good margin.
Meaning, like, for those of us that don't know the details of what that includes. I know, but I'm not assuming that everybody.
Renewing Worship is the name of the project for the new Lutheran hymnal, worship resource.
Okay.
And it's a project that's been going on for, 4 years, something like that. And there's a group, a committee that's working hard on it, and we've seen a lot of the pieces of it that are available now, and there's been a lot of effort to have it available to congregations, a lot of feedback, a lot of conversation about renewing worship. And it's not a finished product yet, and it won't be for some time, but the assembly approved the efforts to date and sort of said, you're on the right track, keep going. And there was a lot of conversation about inclusive language. There were some people that felt like the language was too inclusive, that we're losing something by eliminating some of the masculine language. And this didn't come up on the floor so much, but there's certainly plenty of people that felt the opposite was true, that there's not inclusive enough language, that we retain too much masculine language, and the committee was seeking a balance to have masculine language, feminine language, and inclusive language, a blend of a variety of types of expressions of how we talk about God. You want to call
them? So that's new news to me. It's not finished?
It's not finished.
Okay.
It's well along, but it's not finished.
And there was also a conversation that, you know, was interesting, though it wasn't as, there wasn't as much passion for the renewing worship as there was around the sexuality, but there was, I was surprised, there was more passion than I realized.
It was probably the third biggest thing, maybe.
Yeah, there were people who were, you know, are we ready for a new hymnal? I'm not sure. You know, it's been 27 years.
I talked with a number of voting members, particularly from the eastern part of the United States, who are into the seventh generation of church members, and they're using worship resources that predate the Red Book. And they said, well, this is an issue of pastoral care for us and the families that attend our church. Why do we have to have mandated this new hymnal? We're not going to use it. You know, and if we tried, and if we tried to use it, we'd be in so much trouble. I mean, there are a variety of opinions and positions on that.
Well, it's definitely not mandated. Nobody
right,
has
right.
to use it.
Exactly.
You don't have to buy it. If your church doesn't want it, fine. Let together some other church use it.
Thank you for
sharing. Here and then over to Larry and then back to Harry.
What about the reorganization issues that were there? Did those pass or did that pass?
Yes, they passed. And there was a fair amount of conversation there. That was maybe tied with renewing worship for the second.
Yeah.
The biggest thing we
so
did.
They just kind of bought the whole package that Bishop set forth, or the council, the administration council set forth. Pretty well just all went through as they had laid it out.
I'm sorry, was that a question?
Thanks. Yeah, well, I mean, the whole package just went as it had been presented then by the church council.
Yes, there weren't any amendments that I can think of, and there were many attempted amendments. And probably the one that was the biggest one was there was an effort to retain the Commission for Women, which is being eliminated in its present form in the restructuring. There's no question that the work of the Commission of Women will continue, but it would continue not as its own church unit, but in a different form, as part of every church unit. And some people wanted to retain it in its present form, and that amendment failed, but it did create a lot of conversation.
Also, as part of the restructuring, which was important for the young adult convocation here, is that within the restructuring now, for the first time that I'm aware of, there is a position within churchwide specifically addressing young adult ministry, defined currently as it, in our church, as I understand it, for those between the ages of 19 and 30. And that's the first time we've ever had it.
Sorry. This was just a comment on the age of the LBW and how old it's getting. I worked on the LBW, and when I did, I had brown hair.
The renewing worship book is exciting to me for a number of reasons. Yeah. It's not just a book. It's not all going to be there in this book, but it'll be on a lot of this book. But it will be, first of all, on a disc. You'll have it. It's all digital. It will be on the internet, and it will be evolving. It will be continuing. It's not going to end. And that's a lot of congregations stood up and said, they're using the internet to design their worship. And there's resources from a wide variety of places. It's not all from the official hymnal, from one place. It's from lots of places.
So what color is it going to be?
It's
going to
be red.
Rainbow.
It's going to be red. Rainbow. This was a dramatic moment.
It's going to be red. They unveiled the color.
Oh my God. Another
red book.
Another red book.
I was going to ask what the second biggest thing was, but you just answered that. So I'll change to you were excited earlier about what happened regarding Methodist community.
There was a lot of excitement in the whole room about ecumenical partners and the continuing effort to have full communion fellowship with other churches. And when this happened with the call to common mission, it was very contentious in the church and it was very difficult. We're not really over it yet. But there was, my read of CCM at this point is that it was well worth it. And the Methodist thing was a lot easier. It wasn't as contentious. But it was exciting to have this agreement with another church body that we can have this relationship with and these ties. And that's seen as being very valuable. And we have a lot to gain. The Methodists have a lot of gifts to bring to the Lutheran Church and vice versa, both ways. And that's one of the things that came up with renewing worship is that this was one of the criticisms that was addressed, is that renewing worship is very Lutheran. It's not kind of watered down to be okay for all of our ecumenical partners, but it's our gift to the greater church. This is a Lutheran book. And so we have gifts to bring to other churches and they have to us, and this kind of communication and fellowship, you know, it was a very positive conversation there. I'm very excited that we were able to have this come this far. And it's an interim step. It's not done. This is more the again, like renewing worship, this is the go-ahead to continue down this road with the Methodists.
Yeah, over here.
You were talking about the discussion on how to read the Bible before, and I grew up in the Missouri Synod, and one of the reasons I left was because they look at scripture as inerrant word of God. And part of the reason why I was attracted to the ELCA is because I heard the phrase the living word very often. And I don't know if that's in the church policy or not, or if that's just a phrase that's out there, but if that's in the policy, to me that opens things up much more to the idea that meaning can change according to the world. You know? Is that in church policy? Do you know that?
Maybe somebody else can answer that.
It's in the Constitution.
It's in the Constitution. Yeah. The Constitution describes the ELCA's understanding of the word as, first of all, Jesus Christ, who is the living word, present with us in assembly. And second of all, the proclamation of the gospel, which is the spoken word. And then third, the written word, which is the scriptures which contains the gospel. So it draws on this sort of three-level understanding of the word with the definite intention that they're not equal, that Jesus Christ, the living word, is primary, and that the proclamation of the gospel is secondary, and the written word of scripture is third.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is that we can really commend our bishop.
Oh.
It was very, very
yes.
hard work for him to lead us in this assembly. And he did incredibly well. In fact, it was with such good humor.
Yes.
We can thank God for humor and for his humor. There was one point where he was addressing Lowell Allman, who is the church secretary, and he said, Reverend Chair, and Lowell Allman said, you are the chair. And they just had sort of this back and forth with each other, which was just delightful. So for us to be able to laugh many times during the assembly around these topics that are very near and dear to many people's heart was such a gift. And even during the assembly time when we were talking about the ordination particularly, and I don't know how many of you know this, but there were a number of people in Good Soil who crossed over the assembly line and stood vigil in front of the voting members. And that also was a very hard time for the bishop, because he knew that it was going to happen, but you know, he has to sort of take action. And so he asked them to be removed. And then there were people who were, you know, they were debating how to get these.
He asked them to leave.
He asked them to leave.
Right.
And then there were the people who were debating to try to get them to leave. And at one point, during that time, Bishop Hansen said, let's stand and sing a hymn. Which I thought was very good on his part to sort of relieve the sort of the tension that was rising in the room. He just handled it very well, very respectfully, with a lot of compassion and a lot of grace. So we can really thank God for his work and for his being our leader at this time.
Yeah, in the back.
I really did not know much about the assembly except for the disruption that I was told about from my Word Alone friend. did the Good Soil achieve what they wanted to achieve by having this vigil?
By having the what?
I just want to say disruption.
I would say that they may call it a direct action from the language of civil disobedience and nonviolence.
And I think her question is, did they achieve what they were hoping for? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things they were hoping for is that when the assembly voted, that they were looking at people, real people, and that it wasn't this vague thing about who does it impact and who are we talking about? Well, there's 100 people in front of us, and these are real people, and these are people impacted by this. So I believe that was high amongst their goals. There was some conversation that maybe they lost some votes on recommendation
the timing of it.
Three by doing it, but they weren't excited about recommendation three anyway. So once the amendment failed that would have strengthened recommendation three to something that the Good Soil would have truly supported, then that's when they came onto the floor. So at that point, it was more important to have this visual presence than it was to pass resolution three, recommendation three.
I really don't know much of the history except from the email that I got from my friend kind of gloating, is that it maybe added fuel for people who are really against this, that look what's going on now. Yep. You can't, you know.
So some people were quite angry about it, a few. I don't know how many, a couple spoke up.
I would say that both responses occurred. There were any number of people during both hymn sings that were asked that came up and offered their hymn books to the Good Soil people so that they could sing along. There were people who came up and thanked them or us for being there. I participated in that, although I had permission to be on the floor, so I wasn't breaking any rules of the assembly, but I went forward to stand in solidarity with them. I also, you know, people, you know, came up later and thanked them for being there. But again, it was, for some people, they would read it as a disruption which benefited their cause, and others would see it as possibly a an act of solidarity which they appreciated and buttressed their resolve and sense of unity, not only in that moment, but for the future.
And it wasn't really very disruptive.
Right.
It was completely quiet. They weren't in the way of it seeing anything. We, after this hymn, you know, Mark, Bishop Hansen decided we would proceed and asked the assembly's permission to do that. And we agreed and we went on and for two more hours with really no impact directly. I mean, it was not a...
Well, thanks for sharing the other side of this.
And when you say you went on for two more hours, that means that the Good Soil people were still standing there. Thank you.
Yeah, probably getting tired of standing there.
There's a question over here on the side.
I was very glad to hear you remark that there was good protest in eliminating the Commission for Women. I was the first board chair of the Commission for Women of the ELCA. And we knew that when we started our work 18 years ago, that we had more than 18 years worth of work to do. So, what was your sense that this new system is really going to do anything for women's issues in the church?
The group that was involved in the reorganization, the resource people that answered questions and explained the restructuring, are convinced that this would be more effective. The goal of this was to be more effective.
Mm-hmm. Not just cutting money out of the budget.
It didn't cut money out of the budget, no, because the whole restructuring thing is fairly complex, and I can't speak to all of it, the conversation that occurred around this particular issue, I came away convinced that the reorganization for the Commission of Women was going to be more effective rather than less.
Thanks.
And that there is still a very strong commitment mm-hmm. on the part of the church to the work of the commission. Because that's not what it was about. Mm-hmm.
I want to note that we've been going for an hour and 15 minutes and it's late, and there'll be conversations started from this conversation, but hopefully it won't be the end of any. But it may be a good time to end our conversation tonight. And those of you who wish can remain, and in 15 minutes there'll be comp line in this room. But I want to thank all of you for coming and for the commitment to being community together. It represents, and especially to thank these three for speaking at their experience.